But yeah, if you want to do that or a longer talk, even if we want to split it up so that we could do two medium-length talks, that's fine too. Just email me, geekfest@groupon.com, and we can figure that out. If anyone's looking for a job, we're always hiring at Groupon. It's a pretty cool place to work. We like it a lot. I've been here for 3 years now, over 3 years, which is pretty exciting. So I can tell you a lot about how everything works internally and what it's like to work here. You can talk to me. There are a bunch of people in here from Groupon as well. If anyone needs to use the bathroom, it's outside by the elevator. You can see the signs in the hallway. And if anyone is looking for food and drink, we still have plenty in the back. And that's it. So today we have Aaron, so let's welcome him.
Hello, everyone. Is everyone here okay? All right. My name is Aaron. I am a back-end engineer at Sprout Social. And I actually took kind of an interesting path into computer engineering. I was a composition major in college, and I turned to algorithms and specifically into writing software to write different kinds of music. And at that time, I was just doing it as an augmentation to my regular composing in like a notation program like Sibelius. But in the last couple months, I've been looking into using the Overtone Toolkit to actually perform music live, and that's what I'm going to present on today. So let's get right into it. I need about 12 numbers from 0 to 11. So let's just start. Let's start here in the corner. Just come down the line, give me a number from 0 to 11.
3, 0, 5, 8, 2, 0.
Let's get some big numbers. One more?
11.
All right, I like it. All right, so I'm going to get into exactly what's going on here in a few minutes, but for now, this is the world premiere of a piece that I have called Fractals. I don't think it's done yet. All right, that's it. So we'll talk more about this piece in a minute. But first, I'm going to dive a bit into acoustics and how Overtone works. And then I'll show how I use Overtone to create musical compositions. So the first thing is to understand the nature of sound and that this is a pressure wave. So when I'm talking, I'm actually compressing the air right around my voice with my vocal cords. And that's going out. Oh, sorry, I got to stand still. And your ear interprets this pressure wave, and you can create that signal, and your brain can interpret the sound. So here I've drawn sort of a pressure wave. From here you have a speaker, and then this is the air density from that speaker. So here it's compressed, here it's rarefied, compressed, rarefied, and compressed. So to turn that into a digital sound, we have to sample it. We have to say, from a stationary point in time, we're going to measure that relative air pressure. And you've probably seen stuff like this before, where we're going to create... So if you draw a line that's zero, that's like no pressure, no rarefaction. So here it's low, and then it comes and it's high, and then it comes and it's low, and then it's high, and then it's low, and then it's high. So from this sound wave, we want to convert it to numbers that a computer can process. So it takes samples. So at a bunch of points in time along this timeline, if time is on the x-axis here, I'm going to measure that amplitude, that relative air pressure. And then this number here, how often we take that sample, is called the frequency. Sorry, the sample rate. And if you listen to a CD, the sample rate there is 44,100. So digital audio, that's kind of a traditional number. And professional recordings will get 44,000 samples per second. And in studios, you probably record at 96,000 and so on. The other important number to think about here is the resolution of that sample. Because if you have numbers from -1 to 1, there's infinite number of gradations you could have in between there. So we have to chop it off at a certain decimal place, and that's called the bit depth. So however deep we go, we usually use 16-bit or 32-bit bit depth. Cool. So I talked about sample rate, bit depth. And then the other thing to keep in mind is that sound waves are periodic. It's the same pattern over and over and over again, repeated many times per second. So this is the period of this right here. And the number of times this happens in 1 second is called the frequency of the sound wave. This is measured usually in hertz. Oops. So, with that, I'm going to turn and do some overtone. So in the overtone toolkit, everything starts with an instrument. And just curiosity, how many people in here are familiar with Clojure? Anybody? Good. Maybe a third? All right. So I'll try not to be too code heavy then and talk more about concepts. And if anyone has questions about specifics, I'm happy to discuss it offline or maybe in brief in this meeting. So instrument. We create an instrument. And this is just a wrapper around the SuperCollider API. So Overtone delegates all of the actual work, which is taking these numbers from -1 to 1 and sending them to your sound card where they're turned back into an analog signal. So we create an instrument, and this is about as simple as it gets. I'm defining my instrument with a frequency parameter, and then I'm delegating that to the sine oscillator. So that's this is a sine wave. So this unit generator, it's called, will generate numbers from -1 to 1 according to the sine wave pattern at the frequency that I'm specifying here. So if I, when I call that macro, the definst macro, it returns a function that I can use to actually invoke that instrument. So when I invoke that, this plays our sine wave. Now this will play forever because I didn't tell it to do anything differently, so it's just going to play that sine wave going on in perpetuity. So I can change this to add a different frequency. All right. So that's pretty boring, but moving on to things a little bit more interesting, I'm going to define a slightly less simple instrument. This one has a note, a duration, and an amplitude all as parameters. First thing I'm going to do, I'm allowing the user to specify the note as a MIDI note number, which is a number from, I think, 0 to 128 or something. It's a pitch. And then I have to convert that into a frequency that my unit generators can understand. So I convert that to a frequency. And then I'm going to create an envelope. So an envelope is actually another unit generator, but this is going to produce linear data instead of periodic, like wavetable type data. So I don't know how well you guys can see this over here, but I have this charted here. So here's my carrier frequency, my oscillator. That's producing the sine wave. And then I have an envelope, which I define as from 0 to 0.8, then to 0.8, and then to 0. At these periods. So it takes 0.1 seconds to go from 0 to 0.8. Then my duration to go, it's just that flat line at the top, how long I want the note to last, and then 0.1 seconds to go back down to 0. And then lastly, I have an amplitude, which is just a scalar, a unit generator that'll produce a constant stream of numbers that I can use to scale the entire sound wave so I can make it louder or softer. Then what's really cool about closure in overtone is that they overload this multiplication operator to handle these streams. So you can do lots of cool math, like adding and subtracting and dividing, and every single sample, it'll get one from all of them and combine them and send that on to your sound card. So this time I don't have to stop it explicitly because after however long I said, 0.5 seconds, the note stops. So just like before, I can add some arguments. By default, it'll just take them in the order I set them and then use the defaults for all the rest. So this will use note 70. And you can also get fancy and add the keyword arguments. And this one will be lower, louder, and longer. So that's the basics of creating an instrument. So these instruments can get crazy. This is an instrument taken from the closure source. I'm sorry, the overtone source. I think it was written by Sam Aaron, but I'm not entirely sure. Anyway, you can see some stuff going on here. You have lots of different unit generators. Here's a sawtooth, which is a just goes from 1 to negative 1 straight down and then back up to 1, so it looks like a sawtooth. And you have low-pass filters. You have triangle waves, which is just back and forth between 1 and negative 1 linearly. Anyway, so just as a sample of what kind of things you can do with an instrument. So that's just instruments, just audio synthesis, taking sound waves and combining them in cool ways. So this is somewhat powerful. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of synthesis. I'm not very good at it, and it's hard to create interesting, engaging sounds with sine waves. Some people can do it, and they're good at it, but I like using samples more. So Overtone has a great API for working with samples as well. The easiest way, you can just load a sample with this sample function, and it returns this callable function that will play the sample. This is pretty powerful for things like live performance. People will load up lots of different samples and then trigger them as they want to while they're live coding. But for my purposes, I like to do a little more complicated things, so I load them into a buffer. So I'll take that sample and load all of its wavetable data, which all those negative ones to ones, load that into a buffer in memory. And then you can define an instrument that uses that buffer as the source for a unit generator. I have this playbuff unit generator that gets that buffer and then it can supply the data it needs to. And this will sound pretty much exactly the same, although I've added this envelope also. And I've given it a start and a duration. So the duration I'm building from the envelope, and then the start is built into this play buffer. I can index into that buffer and start at any given sample and play it from there for a certain amount of duration. So this should give us about a second of sound. So this is actually the basis for one of my pieces that I wrote, where I took a buffer and I started with a window of about like half a second, and then I moved through the buffer very, very gradually, and so the sound evolved according to the natural harmonies that were in that sample. And I'll just kind of give you a taste of that here. What we can do is for X equals 1 to 100, so this is our closure, I want to play multiplying X by 2,000. So starting at sample X times 2,000, play for half a second, and then I'll just sleep for that 500 milliseconds until I play it again. Anyway, so that's just a taste. Like I said, that's a piece I called Windows Melody, so if you're interested, you can check it out later. So that's creating sounds, and that's only half of what we have to do, of course. We can create a sound, but what's interesting is how we get those sounds to work together, how we sequence the sounds. So the basic unit of sequencing in overtone is called a metronome,
and this is just like a metronome you might use if you're practicing piano or something like that, where we set a number of beats per minute. So here I'm defining a metronome as 100 beats per minute, and then that returns a callable function like all the other cool macros do that I can call. And if you see the bottom screen in the bottom left, as I invoke this function, it's giving me a number. And this number is the beat number. Oops. And this is global. This will be across this entire application. Anything that uses that metronome will have access to that same beat number. And so you can use this to coordinate events with a couple other tricks. The other cool way to use the metronome is to pass it a beat number as the first argument. And then it will return the timestamp that that beat will occur upon. So I'm just wrapping it in the big int for the sake of displaying, otherwise it would be scientific notation. But so beat 140 occurs at this millisecond timestamp. So just a quick demonstration of using a metronome. I'm going to use two sounds, a bass drum, a kick drum sound, and a hi-hat sound. So this apply-at function will take a timestamp and a function reference, which is the pound ticks right here. This is a function reference. And it will invoke that function at the timestamp that I specified. So I'm going to call this function, and then in 2 seconds, we're going to hear a hi-hat. So, putting a couple concepts together here, I have a function called looper that I'm going to pass an instrument, a metronome, and a beat offset to. First, I'm going to get the current beat, which I get just by calling that metronome as a function. Then I'm going to figure out when the next beat starts by calling that metronome again with my next beat. So this will return something like 17. I'm going to increment that to 18 and then call that with the metronome and get the timestamp that I want this function to be called again. Then I'm going to call my instrument function. So at the metronome offset beat, so if I pass in like a 0.5 offset, it'll figure out the timestamp for halfway between beats. I'm going to call that function at that timestamp, and then I'm going to call this exact function again at my next start time. So then I can use that to get every beat we have that bass drum sound being called. And then I'm going to use that exact same metronome and call the closed hat sound at a 0.5 beat offset, so this will be in between those beats exactly. And then just for fun, I'll add that same sound again at 0.75, so this will be at the 3/4 of the way through. So that's the basics of sequencing. Now I'm going to turn to a slightly more complicated example, and so I have to talk about how to model a melody. And in this way, I'm just modeling a melody as a vector of vectors. So this is a closure vector. It's just with the brackets. And then here I have a note, which is, this is one way of representing a note. It's an E at the fourth octave, and then a duration, and then a repeated, and so on. So every note is just this tuple of pitch and duration. So I need to load these into... And then I have a bass line along the same line. So this technique, this play notes technique, is what I use all over the place. What I'm going to do is have a function that pulls the first note off a list of notes, a collection of notes. It plays that note, and then it figures out when to start the next note, and then it calls itself with the rest of the notes. So it's just picking off the first note, playing it, and then staging the rest of them to be played. I also allow you to specify a beat length here. So we can, instead of using the metronome, sometimes I find it a little bit easier to reason about just using timestamps and using milliseconds. Just for the sake of math, you don't have to worry about beats and that kind of thing. It's all just milliseconds, and you can, personally at least, it's a matter of taste, I can reason better about it. So like I said, I'm pulling off the first of those notes, calculating the duration by multiplying the duration of that note, which was one of these numbers,
by the beat length, then getting the duration in seconds just for convenience, and then this is the remaining, taking the rest of the notes in that list. And then allow to play more than one note. For each note in that pitch vector, play that note. So this is the instrument call. This is actually passed into the function, the function that will actually make the sound. And then if there are things remaining to do, figure out when that needs to start by getting the duration in milliseconds and adding it to the time, which is just a state tracker. It's always passed around to know where we are in the piece. And I'm going to invoke that function at that calculated time. So, and I mentioned you can change the beat length, so I'm just going to demonstrate that quickly. This is the beat length of 500 milliseconds. If I specify that to 100 milliseconds, it will sound like. So that's cool. We can create a melody and play it. But I want to add some stochasticity to it, make something actually a little bit more interesting. So I'm going to create a map. And this is the closure map shorthand, with the open curly braces. And then a key, and then a vector that's the value for that map. And then just have a function to build a chord with a key and those given chord scales. So this is just combinatorials choosing n, two of the scales, getting the key, so this will pass in like the C, getting this list, and then choosing two of those elements. So if you see the output down at the bottom there, as I execute this, it picks a new chord. And then I can define a chord progression, giving it a number of beats and a chord key. And then I can have this, put that together with a function that will actually take my progression, take my chord scales, and then build a playable vector that I can pass into that play function that I've already demonstrated. So this is these are the pitches to play, this is the duration, these are the pitches to play, this is the duration, and so on. So then putting all of this stuff together, I'm going to invoke three versions of that play notes function, all with the same beat length, with different amplitudes so they don't clash. We can have the melody be the loudest, giving a different set of notes to play. So this is Overtone in a nutshell. Happy to answer any questions as we go here, too, so feel free to raise your hand should you feel so moved. All right, so moving into some more esoteric conversations, I guess. I don't think there's really a reason to do what I just did, to play Beethoven with Overtone, save as a demonstration. Like, Beethoven will always sound better with an orchestra. So this is not how I think we should spend this sort of computer technology, is just recreating stuff we can do better other ways. So instead, we want to talk about algorithmic composition. And this is hard. Like, there's people have been doing this for a long time, and it's hard to do in a macro sense. It always comes down to form, I think. And it's easy to create about a minute or maybe 30 seconds of compelling music. But after that, algorithmic composition, it's really hard to get it to continue to be engaging, because it's just like a bunch of sounds. You just hear like a bunch of piano notes, and it's like, hey, that's kind of interesting, but, you know, I'm going to check my email or whatever. So form is another name for music, audible algorithms is another name for music, and that's what I got the name for my talk, that music is inherently algorithmic. We hear it as a process, and there's lots of forms that you're already familiar with, even if you've never heard the word form before, something like verse-chorus in pop music. Usually you have a verse presentation where you have some kind of chord structure, some chord progression that's repeated a few times,
And then it changes to a new chord progression, and that's repeated a few times. Then it goes back to the first one. And this first chorus sets up a way that you can understand the music. You also have things like 12-bar blues, which is just a harmony. And then in classical music, there's tons of these forms like sonata form and canon and fugue, and it goes on and on. So form is important because it gives the composer a framework. It lets the composer have a series of constraints to be creative with it. But it's also extremely important for the listener because without form, it gets boring. If the listener doesn't have something to latch onto and engage with and a context for understanding the music, I think it tends to just sort of, you get bored. So that brings me to the piece that I played for you earlier called Fractals. And this piece is, the only parameter for it is the seed numbers, which is what I got from my volunteers in the front row. So just numbers from 0 to 11. And I'm gonna go through this. I'm going to look at the code a little bit and also just kind of explain how the algorithms that are behind it. So the first thing is that we have to build a vocabulary of melodies to play in the piece. So we'll assign each note, each pitch class, an integer from 0 to 11. And if you think of like a piano keyboard, you have 12 notes, and then they start over again. So C through G with some sharps in there. Sorry, C through B with some sharps. And then it starts over at C. So I've drawn a piano here. I don't know how well you guys can see this, but if we just assign each of these notes an integer, we'll call this a pitch class. And then there are 12 of them. And then we need to have a model for a note. So we can represent that note as a map where we have a key for the pitch and a key for the duration. So I'll show some code here in a second. Then we use those maps to create a melody. We have a list, of a collection of these maps that put together would form some kind of melody. And then, once we have that melody, we can apply various transformations to them, like reversing it, inverting it, lengthening it, shortening it, adding an interval to it, and transposing it. With all of these like pieces to work with, we can create a vocabulary of 12 different functions that will each play a sound. And I'll flip over and show some code. So here we have the numbers that were provided earlier. So the first thing I want to do, or we can do is break that into a melody. And the strategy that I used here was just to take every other number. So our first note will have a pitch of 3 and a duration of 0. Second note will have a pitch of 5 and a duration of 8. And so on. And that will sound like this. So if you notice that those notes sounding together are because we had those zeros here. So I'm just going to change this a little bit to give us a little bit more to latch onto. So that new one will sound like this. That's the main motif for this piece. Then we can transform it. So have these functions that are just list comprehensions that take that motif in and apply various transformations to them. So this is the transpose one. For every element in the motif, get that pitch and add a certain number of steps. So you can call transpose motif 2, which is what I did here, and it will create that new motive based on that transformation. Or we can lengthen it, we can shorten it by multiplying the duration, etc. So the functional nature of closure makes this really, really easy. I can just chain these functions, and each one operates on the other one without having to keep any internal state or anything. So if I, let's see, I'll test like, so remember what the other one sounded like. Now, I will apply a reverse transformation to that.
So the idea here is that we have something that's similar, but not exactly the same, something that we can use to create some kind of interest, some kind of change without being completely new. So then here's the function to build the vocab. So each of these is just a function, anonymous inner function, that takes a duration. So I want to create functions that I can say play for n milliseconds, and then it'll just do its thing. So here I have that melodic, straight up melodic. This is the basic idea for the piece. And then I'm going to invert it and shorten it. This is the second one. And then I want to take a harmonic, which is a slightly different tack. Instead of partitioning it by two, I'll partition by three and take the first two and make a chord just to give another counter melody, another idea to drive the piece. And then I can apply these transformations, and this is sort of a guess and check kind of thing. I mean, just kind of play with it until you find things, until I found things that I thought were pleasing. And then we can play all of these vocab. Just I'll play a few of them, so you can hear all of the different vocabulary the piece is going to be based on. Harmonic one where it's taking the duration, the first two notes together, and so on. I'll listen to all these. So that gives us the vocabulary that we're going to use to build this piece. Then we want to take that numbers list again and then build the form from that same numbers list. So for each number in our list, we want to take the first n of those functions. So we had 12 of them. We have numbers from some 1 to 11, so we can increment it and take that many and then play them all. So this gives a sort of repetition and also determinism where we can have the same things coming back exactly. Further, we want to start each note from that N as its baseline. So remember, we're just using pitch classes here. These are just numbers from 0 to 11. We have to figure out how to get to a MIDI note from there. So the two pieces of that are getting an octave, which would be adding 12, 24, something like that, to give it an actual MIDI note number. And then we can also scale every single one of those notes by another note. We can add an additional value, and that will actually shift everything in the piece a little bit. So this is kind of like a harmonic chord progression. And we can play each section for n seconds at n speed. So what I'm trying to do here is mix all of, like fractals, what it suggests. I want everything in this piece to kind of come from the same thing. As you get into more of it, it's the exact same form. And it's not a mathematical fractal, not exactly, but, you know, it's just kind of the spirit. So play this piece again, and I'll leave the terminal up, and you can kind of see what's going. So that's the end. And I'll just play one more that I curated, so I think it's a little bit more interesting, but this is the live code example. Oops, sorry, in the wrong terminal. The cool thing about Overtone, I think, is that it lets anyone be a composer. You don't have to understand instruments. You don't have to have access to an instrument to create music. You can just use your imagination and stream sounds together, and, you know, most of what comes out is not very good, but every now and then, you know, sometimes it is. So here are a few composers, if you find these kind of things interesting, that I would recommend. I don't know if you can just memorize that real quick. And then, if you want to hear more of this kind of stuff, I have all these compositions up on GitHub. And I think that's in the Geekfest notes or something. And then also, I have recordings up on SoundCloud. So that will do it. If you happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
What did you use to actually record the
sure.
What
you're doing? It has a built-in function, so you can just call recording start, give it a path, do your thing, and then call recording stop, and it saves it to an audio file on your computer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm interested in the sample.
Sure.
That you had. Is there a certain format? Was it in like a MIDI format, or do you have a WAV
sure.
File?
The question was, what's the format for the samples? And the answer is there's support for all the common formats. I wouldn't recommend using MP3s because an MP3 is compressed. Instead of having this nice, you know, wave table of all the sounds, it'll be much clipped and it won't sound as good. So usually you'd use an AIF or a wave file.
Here's the open-ended aspect of that. So I worked with some data before, and there was some subtleties in the, you know, peaks and valleys and whatnot. But I thought it would be nice if I could somehow take that data and turn it to sound, because I might be able to hear these differences better than I could see them. How would you propose taking, you know, a simple data set, maybe a time and some voltage or something like that, and then, I guess, listening to it via Overtone?
Sure. The question is, could you take just arbitrary data and listen to it as a sample? And the answer is yes, sort of. The problem is that sound files are very fickle and that it would probably just sound like white noise or something very unpleasant or just, you know, loud. If it doesn't have a good structure, it's not going to sound like music. And I've messed this a little bit in creating a buffer and populating it with data from -1 to 1, and it's just hard to do well. It's certainly possible, but I don't know how valuable it would really be as a like auditing a data set or anything like that. Yes?
This seems to involve a lot of trial and error and just having a sense of what nice music is. Is there algorithmic music that is based on mathematical theories or theories from music theory?
Yeah, one of the composers I mentioned, Xenakis, has some pieces like that where he uses like set theory and math and creates different like unions and intersections of pitches. And That piece is called Herma, and it'll blow your mind if you listen to it. H-E-R-M-A, I recommend it. But yeah, a lot of people do different things. As far as like how to create music, I think that algorithms are more of a tool than a solution, I guess. I think it still takes a human to make music that's interesting to humans. If a computer were to make music all on its own, I think it would probably be interesting to a computer, but maybe not to a human. But like artificial intelligence, stuff like this, it's an interesting area of research, trying to get computers to create interesting music. And, you know, does that answer your question?
Yeah,
it's kind of a non-technical question, but
sure.
You're a piano? Do you play piano?
Yes.
Do you think there's any value to like the algorithm testing if it could be played by one person on a piano?
Well, it depends.
In other words, you know, the
sure. Obviously, the piece that I played was not playable.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, just because we've all heard that.
Sure. So. It depends what your goal is. If you're using a computer program to create a score that you want to give to a pianist, then, yeah, you probably need to make sure it's playable. But I'm not particularly interested in doing that. I'd rather write a computer program that just makes sound for it just makes sound. I mean, if you want to write music for a piano, you can probably do that by hand.
I mean, my question was, like, more philosophical.
Sure.
Like, do you think people, humans, have an affinity for that just because
heard. Oh, yeah.
So there might be some value to doing those kind of sounds versus or the flip side is maybe we're bored of that and you're able to do stuff that you can't do on a piano.
So the question is why use the sampled piano sound, I guess, if I could paraphrase. And I said I find it more pleasing. It's what I'm used to, I guess. It's also built into overtones, so that makes it easier to experiment with. I don't have to worry about loading up samples and figuring out how to trigger them all. I can use a built-in instrument and just play it. Yeah.
How big is the sound library that comes with Overtone?
The instruments you can play?
Yeah.
I'm not super familiar. Maybe 20 or 30 or so. Like, you have your basic like FM synthesizers, and you have like I played a couple of like the drums and that kind of stuff. You can also use Freesound if you're familiar with the website freesound.org. Has a bunch of samples and Overtone integrates with it where you can just give it a free sound ID and then play it right out of the box. They'll download it and cache it and somewhere on your computer. Yeah?
Can you perform live? Do you perform live with this?
I have never done that before.
Okay. Do you know, do the people who do that, do they tend to sort of recreate something that they've previously composed? Like, just like someone playing a song on a guitar that they played many times? Or does it tend to be more improvisation?
Well, there's two angles again. There's a couple of bands. Sam Aaron, who was one of the creators of Overtone, has a band called Meta X, which is pretty fun to listen to. And they do live performance with Overtone. They'll actually like create up a bunch of sounds, and then they'll just start them playing, and then they'll loop them in, and they'll actually control it live, like playing their computer like an instrument. So, and then the other angle is what I was doing today, which is the like, algorithmic compositions, where you just press go, and it does it. Like I was touched on briefly, I don't think there's a whole lot of value in trying to recreate something you did already in Overtone because you already did it. Like, what is Overtone adding to that equation? Like, if I write a piano piece that's playable by a person, I just sit on the piano and play it. Like, if I use Overtone, I'm watching something really cool, like playing 400 sounds simultaneously, like that kind of thing. Anything else? Questions?
Yeah. When you're using the sampler, are you able to create instruments that use certain sounds for a certain range? So you could have, you know, if you want to have like the timbre of the high keys versus the low keys on a piano, kind of like separating those and allowing you to abstract over that, just playing.
Sure. The way that's usually done actually is you create a buffer, which is that sample, but instead each sample actually points to another buffer ID. That lets you use it in the super collider in like the sound card world, where you can get an index into that buffer that gives you an ID of another sound. So you can create a single instrument that actually draws from as many samples as you want to make it draw from.
Okay, cool.
Yeah?
You mentioned that Overtone wraps a super collider API.
Yes.
Can you give like a brief introduction to that API for someone who has no idea what it's about?
I cannot. Yeah, I don't know. It's very similar. It's all encapsulated with Clojure, so I've never actually dealt with it. Anything else? Yeah.
Are there MIDI libraries to ship with this in order to like send the music you're playing out
through
MIDI, or to perhaps be able to capture something that you're doing on a keyboard?
Definitely. You can. Some of the cool demos, if you like, look on YouTube, people will actually output MIDI data to some kind of graphics board or something. They'll have lights flashing according to certain signals and stuff like that. Yeah, it's, MIDI is very well supported. Yes?
Is there a way to output the data so that you could read it like you would read sheet music?
I'm not aware of one. You can output it as MIDI. It depends on what you're doing. Like, if you're using samples, there is no sheet music. It's just a wavetable that you're playing. If you're using MIDI, you can probably find a way. You can use Clojure. I mean, you could find some way. MIDI is just a data format, so there's got to be a way to do that. But that's actually how I started. I would write Java programs that would output MIDI files that I could import into Sibelius and then give them to a performer. Yeah?
Does it support OSC if you're if you're sending real-time data that is audio related or MIDI related from Overtone to, let's say, Ableton or...
I'm not familiar with OSC.
It's it stands for Open Sound Control. It's a networking protocol for MIDI and data that's supposed to supersede MIDI. It's faster.
Yeah, so there's, I don't know, offhand, sure, there's definitely lots of ways to chain up inputs and outputs that I haven't experimented with, because usually just playing to my system's sound is fine for my purposes, but probably, I don't know. All right, well, thanks very much. I'm happy to answer any more questions, but... Thank you.